Hello, and welcome to Cisco's Connected Government in Action podcast, a program where we discuss the issues of the day and the technologies that can help government agencies perform more efficiently. Informative and interactive, Cisco Connected Government in Action features guest speakers from government and delivers relevant and timely discussions that keep you up to date on the latest trends in the government and technology. And now, here's your host, Central Government Specialist Chris Shinnefield and John Spiker from Cisco.
All right, here we are, the very first Connected Government in Action podcast. First of all, thanks for joining us. I'm Chris Shinnefield, and I want to welcome you to our show today. I'm joined here by my esteemed colleague, John Spiker. Welcome, John.
Good to be here, Chris. We've got a great show today. We're going to start off with a great subject.
Today, we're going to talk about information sharing, how agencies are collaborating, what challenges they're facing, what still needs to be done. We'll hear from some leaders who are taking information sharing to new levels, creating environments that can improve their productivity and ability to serve and protect the public.
Before we dive into our first segment, I want to quickly run through what we have for the show today. First, we have a panel discussion with Mr. Howard Schmidt, President and CEO of RH Security Consulting, and Mr. Ken Watson, Senior Manager of the Cisco Critical Infrastructure Assurance Group, who both have been and continue to be pioneers in cyber and homeland security. Howard Schmidt retired from the White House after 31 years of public service as the Special Advisor for Cyberspace Security. I look forward to his views on homeland security and public safety after nearly 40 years of experience in public and private sector. Most recently as VP and Chief Information Security Officer at eBay and as Chief Security Officer for Microsoft.
Yes, and Ken Watson's responsibility is to drive Cisco's worldwide critical infrastructure security research, policy, and standards are just a small portion of his professional responsibility. He's also Chairman Emeritus of the Partnership for Critical Infrastructure Security and Chairman of the National Cybersecurity Alliance.
Following that, we will dive into the thought leader editorial part of the show, a segment where industry leaders sound off on our chosen topic. Today, Greg Akers will take a few minutes to speak about information sharing. Finally, we'll finish up our first podcast with an interactive segment called Listener Mail. More details on that will come at the end of the podcast.
Leave them in suspense, huh?
Yeah, they're going to have to listen to the entire show, Chris.
Sounds like a great show, John. So let's get into our first segment. Now it's time for our guest interview. In this segment, we'll speak with industry experts that are really taking action in helping to protect and share information within the public and private sectors. Today's guests are Mr. Howard Schmidt and Mr. Ken Watson. Welcome to the show, Ken and Howard. I understand you're going to talk about public and private sector lessons learned in information sharing and even share some ideas for the way going forward.
The term information sharing has been so overused that you really need to define it depending on the use and who you're sharing information with. It can mean just sharing information about your day with your spouse, or it could be information sharing between an intelligence agency and a customer. It could be information sharing at the Information Sharing Analysis Center level or the ISAC level. And that's very specific about threats, vulnerabilities, countermeasures, and best practices. And it could be information sharing among executives to help make strategic decisions for companies and government organizations.
Howard, what would you say in the industry defining information sharing as?
Yeah, and Ken's really given some good concrete examples, and I think I would boil it down to a couple perspectives. One, information sharing is, once again, overused and overblown in some cases. But the key issues about information sharing is, one, to make sure that you're not duplicating efforts, therefore everyone's not going out and trying to identify what the vulnerabilities are. They're leveraging the relationships with others. The second piece of it is, we found something that didn't work, sharing those stories with other people, in confidence, of course, and having it protected and trust. And I know we'll talk a little bit more about the trust piece of it a little bit later. But clearly being able to say, listen, this did not work for us, here's the reason why, and be able to give that to somebody else, and hopefully they can indeed do a better job of protecting their infrastructure as well.
Thank you very much. I'd like to go next from the definition to discussing more about what was the inception of the recent interest in information sharing. I know that there's been a significant interest in trying to share information about upcoming potential attacks or upcoming threats to our nation. What has been the major focus and impetus to information sharing initiatives today, and how far have we progressed so far? Ken, would you like to take a crack at that first?
Sure. How have we progressed? I guess you could start before the terrorist attacks of 9/11. There was a report, and we could probably talk more about this. The President's Commission on Critical Infrastructure Protection recommended that industry and government and information sharing and analysis centers, or ISACs, to discuss threats, vulnerabilities, and solutions among themselves and across the ISACs and between the private sector and the government. Well, they began to stand up in 1999, and then the Cross-Sector Coordinating Council, the Partnership for Critical Infrastructure Security, or PCIS, also stood up in 2000 and began to share information with those that were coordinating critical infrastructure protection for their sectors and across the sectors. Interesting to note the progress and improvement in information sharing based on mistakes made, actually, and lessons learned from those mistakes. The NIAC, the National Infrastructure Advisory Council, published a report recently on sharing information between the private sector and the intelligence community. And there are four case studies in that document. The second one is on the warnings given to the financial services sector in 2004 that listed five specific potential targets of terrorist attack. And then the fourth case study was on the threats to the subway system in New York and New Jersey. And it's interesting how that they note that there were mistakes made in 2004 that were corrected the next year in the next warning. A specific mistake that was made was Department of Homeland Security wanted to warn a target that happened to be a Citigroup building in New York. So they warned Citigroup. Turns out, though, that Citigroup didn't own the building, didn't occupy the building, and was not responsible for its security. Not only that, but there was a communications facility that shared a wall with one of the targets, or potential targets, and there was mass transit running under the street, and neither the communications nor the mass transit sector were notified. As a result of that, the PCIS, as I mentioned before, was identified as the organization that should be notified so that cross-sector notification could be made, even though that DHS or whatever government agency was making the warning didn't really know whether there was any involvement across different sectors or not. At least you'd have someone that could vet that and help make that decision. And the warnings to the subway and mass transit facilities in New York and New Jersey the next year were done much more efficiently and effectively because that was done. The lessons learned from that case study was that you needed to notify a cross-sector organization like the PCIS so that the right people who knew who was responsible for security for not only the target facility but those that were co-located would get the right notification. And that was used very effectively in the later case study.
Great. Thank you very much. So the PCIS had organized an efficient structure to allow the government to communicate through it to notify those who needed to hear about specific situations. So that's now available for them to take advantage of. That's a great example. Is this a relevant example for non-DHS organizations as well to learn from for information sharing?
Yeah, I really think it is. And to Ken's point, and when Ken mentioned this, sort of in the very beginning of this, the genesis for a lot of the pieces about information sharing actually predated anything relative to September 11th. In 1996, there was a study, the President's Commission for Critical Infrastructure Protection, looking at the idea about information systems and how they affect our day-to-day life, and in three major areas as well. That's national security, public safety, as well as the financial viability and the economic viability of the nation itself. And out of that, of course, this was in 1996, when the report was released in 1997, and then subsequently, Presidential Decision Directive number 93 was put out in May of 1998. It very clearly articulated that private industry needed to do more information sharing amongst themselves in order to, once again, protect our critical infrastructure, and it was defined at that time in eight different sectors. So when Ken and I worked on forming the PCIS, and at the time it was the IT-ISAC, which was the second information sharing analysis center, in which the first one for the IT sector, part of the issue was looking at this was looking at the lessons learned from private sector with the extra bonus as appropriate, and when the perspective was the information can be protected, that we would share with government. And the reason there was sort of a wall between the two is because private sector informally had been sharing information for a long time, particularly security professionals with other security professionals, because we all benefited from it. But to Ken's example, moving forward, some of the illustrations about DHS or looking at some of the things the Department of Defense or the private sector, clearly this transcends just those specific government agencies, whether it's the criminal justice system through the Department of Justice, or just as importantly with the multi-state ISAC Information Sharing Analysis Center for all the state and local governments. Our ability to share with all these various levels relevant, timely information that we feel comfortable can be protected at these various levels is important. So it does go beyond just DHS, and it does go just beyond the federal government as well.
Thank you, Howard. How do we establish that form of trust across private sector, where there's often competitive pressures to keep information as intellectual property, and certainly the privacy issues of sharing it with government? How do you establish that trust? What have you done so far?
There are really two ways that's been done. At the ISAC level, it's been done on a sector-by-sector basis. For example, the Commercial Facilities Coordinating Council is able to share information with people that run commercial facilities because they know each other and they operate similar facilities. And if you go to them, they'll know who is responsible for security, who the security directors are for the buildings. Same with electricity, same with IT or communications. And they know and trust each other because they're working in the same industry. So the ISACs have been built around a sector vertical approach to trust. At the regional level, you have organizations like InfraGuard that were organized around field offices of the FBI that establish a trust mechanism for local businesses and their local FBI special agent or special agent in charge, whatever the nomenclature is. At the global level, there's a global form of incident response and security teams, FIRST, that has a trust mechanism based on protecting information that's shared. It's an interesting organization for sharing information on threats, vulnerabilities, and solutions around the world. And its trust is based on the honor system. If you are a U.S.-based FIRST incident response team member and you have a problem coming from, say, Bulgaria, you can call your Bulgarian counterpart team and they'll help you. You can work together to resolve the issue. And no one else needs to be notified. It's just between the two of you, and then the information is destroyed when the issue is resolved. It's a self-policing trust mechanism in that if a FIRST team member violates that trust and discloses some information that shouldn't be, they no longer receive information. And that's the worst form of death for a FIRST team member, is not to get any information.
What Ken talks about is really, really important, and because when you look at sort of the evolution, if you would, of information sharing and trust relative to that, in the early days, it was clearly a one-on-one, personal-to-personal basis in which that trust was built. You work with someone, you gave them a little bit of information, they protected it, they give you a little, and it went back and forth like that. The next thing is we were setting up the ISACs, for example. Then it became a matter of what are the processes that we have in place that we can say are somewhat institutionalized that will live beyond the relationship, say, for example, in Ken's perspective and mine as well, that we've known each other, we've worked each other. Ken's a great professional. I enjoy working with him, and I know he'll do the right thing. Well, what happens if Ken and I are in a different environment? We're no longer working this thing. You have to have those processes institutionalized, and that's what we get through the ISACs. That's what we get through the InfraGuard, and clearly that's what we get through FIRST. And so it's a two-step dance that we go through. Additional to that is we have some protections that are given by law. For example, some of the exceptions to the Freedom of Information Act that the federal government in the U.S. has passed relative to sharing information with them, what can now be protected, which gives those that are in the position to share that information a higher level of confidence under the letter of law that their information will indeed be protected.
So it sounds like the entire information sharing spectrum begins with relationship, is established and maintained through process, and then policy. It makes it more of a mature structure in thriving organizations even. Is that what you're seeing happening right now?
Exactly. It starts with personal relationships, but then you want to institutionalize the trust so you don't depend on those relationships.
Right. That's
people move on, but if the institution can carry with it the trust that was built on the personal relationships, then you can maintain trust even through personnel rotation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We talked about what happened with what's really evolved in information sharing as far as Homeland Security and the structure of the government and private sector. We talked about information sharing. We even touched on lateral information sharing, where you mentioned private sector doing a better job of sharing information among its own sector council members and also upstream with government with the proper protections. The next question I have is really, what's next? What do we need to focus on next to improve what's already in place?
Well, I think one of the things that we continue to strive for is more seamless automation, making sure that the information gets to the right person at the right time, any platform, on any device. And that's one of the things I think is sort of the next steps. As you mentioned, we've gone through the relationship piece. We've gone through the institutionalized perspective of it. We've gone into the policy perspective. Now, how can we really leverage the technology so when Ken sees something happening at his vantage point and I'm off in Bulgaria or Hungary or Prague somewhere and I'm time zones away and I'm in the middle of the night, to make sure he can get that information to someone, in this case, would be myself, that has the ability to take action with that to better protect our systems or to respond to an ongoing issue. I think that's the piece that we're really working and using newer technologies to make sure that takes place.
Thank you, Howard. Ken, what's your view on what's next?
I would agree with Howard, and it's a little bit of a challenge to preserve privacy protection as you protect the information itself, but allow information sharing with the right people at the right time. Industry and government are working together along those goals or toward those goals, and we're making progress.
Do you have examples of information that needs to be protected but needs to be reported up, but protected as reported?
Let's say Howard is in a research organization, and he's discovered a vulnerability in a vendor product that's never been disclosed. The vendor hasn't talked about it, and then the government doesn't know about it, but it could create problems for the vendor's customers. How is he going to get that to the vendor without disclosing it to the public? Can he email it to them? Well, if he's got public key encryption that can protect that information, he can do that if the vendor is set up to receive that. Or if it's a vulnerability that affects multiple vendors, and there have been some vulnerabilities that affect over 200 or 300 vendors at the same time, then is there a multi-vendor coordinator that can receive and distribute encrypted information like that without disclosing it to the public? And it's not a matter of keeping information from the public. It's a matter of keeping the information from the bad guys who might act on it before the good guys have a chance to incorporate the fixes to protect their customers.
It sounds like that's very complimentary to what Howard just said a second ago, which was Howard mentioned seamless automation to get information to the people at the right time who need to be able to respond to it properly. Then Ken mentioned encryption and security and public key infrastructure support to be able to protect information as it flows across a public. And I mentioned that those two seem to be very similar in that to be able to get the information to where it needs to go, it most likely has to traverse a public network to get there, no matter where that person has to be. So there needs to be some encryption and security in the information, even coming out from the agencies to the responders, let alone coming into the organizations from the public. So that sounds like that's a really fundamental need to be able to get that pulled together properly to protect information wherever it's flowing.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's another layer of complexity in information sharing that neither Ken nor I has addressed at this juncture, and that's the piece when you have information coming back from any government entity, whether it's state and local. In the case of many of our pieces of information we get may come from a criminal investigation that's being conducted locally, or in the case of the federal government or other governments outside the U.S. government, information obtained relative to a intelligence operation or some intelligence gathering function that they've got going that oftentimes rises to a level of very, very special information, whether it's law enforcement sensitive only, whether it's classified information, or whether it's sensitive but unclassified. And how do we share that with the masses? And the masses I'm talking about, those that really need to do something. I'll give you a real live example. An individual working for a large corporation that has a tremendous ownership of a large chunk of IT infrastructure that we depend on a day-to-day basis. When you have one individual that has the appropriate security clearances and the ability to get this information from, say, a government entity at the federal level and been given information, Ken mentioned earlier about a vulnerability, for example, a vulnerability that does exist, something needs to be done to take care of that, but if you tell the IT staff to go fix it, it will be a clear indication to either the people involved in the intelligence piece or the criminal investigative piece that someone knows that something's on, which could actually hamper your ability to dig further into whatever the activity, whether it's terrorism, whether it's criminal activity, whatever the case may be. These are some of the things by having those relationships that Ken and I mentioned earlier. It's really important to understand that everything is just not very binary where you turn it on or you turn it off. There are certain segments where you may be able to give a small segment of the information. So the expectation has to be given on all sides. We may not be able to give everything, but we will give you what we can under those certain circumstances and hopefully someday be able to give you more.
It's not just protecting the information wholesale from source to endpoint, back to source again, but it's also taking out the pieces that are not cleared for someone to see that information, but still sharing what they need to know. That's a very interesting challenge, isn't it?
It is, and I think it's one of the things that sometimes in this desire to do information sharing, I run into people from time to time who feel very much put out by the fact that they're trustworthy people, they're people of high integrity, high level of ethics, and they feel somewhat challenged because someone can't share everything with them, and it's nothing personal, and it's something that we all have to recognize. There are limitations, what we can and cannot do, and with our common goal, and it's one of the key things in Ken had alluded to this earlier, which I think is really important. We have a common goal in information security to make things better. When we talk about sharing of information to protect our companies, to protect our governments, to protect our own personal data and things of that nature. So consequently, there's a common goal that we're all working to, and we all have a different part in making those things work.
The last question I'd like to do is a wrap-up question. We have been discussing information sharing with Homeland Security and intelligence agencies, but what would you like to share with agencies and departments who may be focusing on information sharing as a way to improve the way they deliver services to citizens, sharing information across organizational boundaries? What can be learned from what's happened with Homeland Security and the private sector councils that can be applied to these government agencies as well?
I'll start, if that's all right.
Yes.
For one thing, the Preparedness Directorate in the Department of Homeland Security has learned a great deal about who to deal with in the private sector, at least regarding owners and operators of critical infrastructures. And so other departments and agencies could leverage what DHS has learned over the last 3 years and know who to go to coordinate, say, for exercise participation, for real-world operational information sharing, for strategic and policy planning, because the DHS is now working with the sector coordinating councils in the sectors, the PCIS, the ISACs, other information sharing and analysis mechanisms that exist. And what we see from many other government agencies is a real, sometimes surprising, scattershot approach to who to deal with in the private sector to share information. Sometimes it's associations that they've been dealing with for years and they're familiar with, and sometimes they're the appropriate ones, and sometimes there's a need to go back and make the right contacts and bring together people that haven't been brought together before. But DHS has been working this issue, at least in critical infrastructure protection, for the last 3 years, and I would suggest that departments and agencies could give them a call and figure out who they've been dealing with and work along those same lines.
That sounds like that may be good also for simply understanding the structure of how to engage in public sector, private sector partnerships, how to establish organizational relationships to support that.
Yeah, and I agree with Ken. There's a lot of good lessons that have been learned, and I wouldn't, once again, and I think Ken brought it up earlier, with a terrific example of the FIRST organization, once again, the Forum of Incident Response Teams, that basically for years and years has been known to share information and have good mechanisms in place to do it. So even though we talk in many cases about the Department of Homeland Security, there's a lot of other activities going on with the State Department in the U.S. We're talking about the Department of Justice and the high technology world as well as our counterparts overseas and individual company to company. So if one were to do this matrix of who needs to share information with whom and what are the lessons learned, I think we all have really good stories that we could share on how we've been able to pick up the phone at midnight and say, listen, I see this strange activity taking place. Someone be able to take it to the next natural level and say, yes, I see it too, and here's what I determined it to be, and then in turn let someone else know that has the ability to protect themselves. That's where it really pays off, and that's where I think we've learned the lessons how to make that thing happen really quickly and very concisely.
Yes,
I'd like
sir.
To amplify what I said in light of what Howard just said. Howard brought up a very important point. One of the things that the private sector has advised DHS from the beginning is not to invent new organizations, but leverage existing ones. Howard mentioned FIRST, which is a very important, strong organization that's been around for years. Existing internet service providers, other organizations that have been in existence need to be leveraged. That's part of what the Department of Homeland Security has learned over the last 3 years and something that I think is applicable across the government.
Thank you. As one last wrap-up, what would you like to summarize about information sharing that you've learned so far that you want to share with these government customers who are listening right now to this podcast? Ken?
If you go back to knowing who you're talking to and protecting the information that you're sharing, as long as the goal is the common goal of protecting critical infrastructures and securing the nations and the economies that we all need for the way we live, work, play, and learn, then we're all on the right track.
Howard?
And I agree with Ken. It's really tough to sum it up any better than that. That clearly, the content that we have, the experiences we've learned, the ability to trust in others with a common goal really take us to the next level of this. And when Ken talks about, you know, sharing of information, setting expectations, I think, is one of the clearly important issues that we need to look at to make sure that people do understand that their role, be it extremely minute in their mind, really is just one small piece in making sure that we do a better job about not only sharing relevant information, but information that's shared that really can make a difference in the way we live our lives and protect our infrastructure.
Great. Gentlemen, Mr. Howard Schmidt, Mr. Ken Watson, we thank you very much for joining us today on this podcast. really a great discussion. I think we've just barely touched the surface on information sharing here, but it was a great introduction to the benefits and the challenges facing us still in information sharing. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Take care. My pleasure.
The written word, the printing press, the telephone, the World Wide Web. Ideas that change the world by helping people share information in new and effective ways. Now Cisco Systems is taking information sharing to the next level, harnessing the power of something that's common to us all, the network, to create a more connected government through unified communications. With Cisco Unified Communications, government agencies are turning the vision of a connected government into a reality. Leveraging the power of the network, Cisco Unified Communications helps people find each other quickly and see at a glance if and how best to contact them. With advanced applications for messaging, contact centers, and conferencing, Cisco Unified Communications blends voice, video, and data interactions seamlessly. Now people can work effectively and securely wherever they're located. This changes everything. Cisco Unified Communications is one of many ways Cisco Systems is helping government accomplish its mission, improve citizen services, and reduce costs. Whether you work for the government or use and pay for the services it provides with your tax dollars, the network can transform government. Innovation, powered by Cisco. Find out more at www.cisco.com.
Welcome back. Now it's time for what we call the Thought Leader Editorial. In this part of the show, we will provide 3 minutes to an expert to discuss the benefits, challenges, and some real-world examples of the show's chosen theme. In this case, information sharing.
I kind of think of this segment as the Andy Rooney part of our podcast.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it, without cynicism. Today, we have Greg Akers, Senior Vice President and Chief Technology Officer for Cisco Systems. Mr. Akers runs a global organization in Cisco that addresses the unique requirements of government's core business. Mr. Akers also plays a crucial role as an Internet security and critical infrastructure protection interface with the U.S. federal government and Cisco customers. He served as the president of the IT Information Sharing and Analyst Center, ISAC, organized in 2002 and vice president in 2001. Mr. Akers is also a member of the National White Collar Crime Board and the board of directors of the Eastern Carolina InfraGuard. Mr. Akers also provides advisory services to the Department of Defense and intelligence communities. Greg will spend a few minutes making his case for better analysis and integration of information from public and private sector sources.
Thank you, Chris. So as Howard and Ken have already discussed, the need for information sharing is critical at all levels of government. And in fact, we're beginning to see a number of initiatives take hold that are beginning to facilitate this. If it's nothing more than the bringing the right people together on an informal basis or actually creating more formal processes to do it, the need to share the information is the key thing. The other piece of it is that once we share information, we then need to get it back out to the right people. But there's a step in the middle that I'd like to talk about just a little bit, and that's the process of actually bringing information together and making sense out of it, and then being able to take the sense-making and deploy it back in the hands of people that actually can take action from it. And sometimes those steps are not as easy as one might think. Information comes into these environments in a number of different ways. As you've heard Ken and Howard discuss, the notions of vulnerabilities and threats and solutions to those things are things that they're accustomed to dealing with in the environment of the ISACs and the FIRST community and other places like that. You take information like that and you bring it together with information from other open sources, whether it's news environments or whether it's written material that someone may have published, or in fact it could be information that's very closely held by a government, by a law enforcement agency, by a defense area outside of the country that the particular need is in. And these things need to be brought together in a way that useful, tangible action can be taken from them. And those processes sometimes are the key to actually doing something that's worthwhile out of it. And so what we begin to discover is that people are beginning to take and put both resources in the form of people, technology, and the processes that support them into a position that actually take that information and analyze it in a way that produces something beneficial. That analytics step actually can take a number of different tacks. People can actually use the information together in the same place. They can do it virtually, or they can do it on a one-by-one basis, kind of bilaterally, as people need to be brought into the discussion. Technology is really the key here. And in fact, as you've heard from some of the discussions that Ken and Howard spoke about with experience with FIRST, trust and interaction is the key. Technologies can really help this. Whether it's as simple as a matter of sharing information collaboratively through an instant messaging session or through something like that, or in fact, more directly through network-based teleconferencing or telepresence applications, people begin to establish a way to work with each other over great distances, and institutions are beginning to apply a lot of resources to learning how to do this, whether it's building a fusion center to actually take this information into a single place and let all the parties come together, or whether it's using the virtual nature of technology and allowing them to do it. They work on it together, they dissect it, they understand it, and then they go forward with the information they provide to people that can actually make use of it. I learned a couple of weeks ago of a fusion center that's actually being developed across myriads of different levels of law enforcement, all the way from municipal law enforcement through state law enforcement up to national law enforcement, where people can come together either virtually or directly in a same place environment, work on something, and then they can send it back to their own channels and distribute it to people that can actually coordinate the activities to take action against it, whether it's an arrest or whether it's another initiative that needs to be taken place to take advantage of it. They can then coordinate it very well. And this is the key thing. This is something that people really are beginning to realize is important to their ability to take information that has been shared and make good, credible use of it so that we're not working over things twice, we're not duplicating effort, and most importantly, in some cases, avoiding jeopardizing the intent of what we're trying to accomplish, meaning making an arrest or something like that, by making a mistake, by doing something that actually could jeopardize the integrity of the arrest or the integrity of the action being taken. So it's very important to understand that. There's another piece that comes out of this, too. As you've heard in previous discussions, as pointed out in the Black Book on Government Security, sometimes it's very difficult to take information from these disparate sources, whether it's information that's open source or information that may come from a very classified environment, and begin to bring it into a focus to take action against it because of the different places it comes from. Classification, sensitivity, other things may come into it. Well, by allowing these fusion environments to exist, either again virtually or directly, these problems can begin to be overcome because the participants can actually take the information and bring it into a level that's pertinent to the discussion, but protect the original sources and the places by which this was derived and put it into a position that it becomes actionable. And then once it's taken back to the places, to their own organizations or to other actionable entities to take action against it, they can then use their own techniques to either change the posture back to something that's needed or keep it in a way that's actionable for the one intent. So let me give you an example. I mentioned the fusion center that was being used in law enforcement a few weeks ago that I learned about. Well, these people are beginning to take information, bring it together, go through the steps of declassifying in some cases if it's needed or desensitizing it if it's coming from another place, decide what they're going to use it for, put together a plan of action, set up another means by which that information is going to be controlled, and then distribute it and execute. And the net result is we end up with an environment that is able to act quickly, act precisely, and act definitively with a level of integrity that allows certainty of the action to be completed with the intent that they had originally had. So I think these are things that are very important to keep in mind as we talk about the notions of information sharing and how to make sense of information that's brought together to ensure that we get the result we're trying to actually obtain. With that, what I'd like to do is to tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity to spend time with you. I'd like to say thank you to Ken Watson and Howard Schmidt for their engagement in this podcast. Would ask all of us to thank Howard Schmidt and Ken Watson for their participation. They bring forth a great deal of information sharing aspects that are important to us, and I wanted to make sure that everybody understood how important this is to our government agencies and to the constituents that they serve. Information sharing is something we're all learning about, and we're learning to do it together in a way that's the most productive and the most beneficial, and would greatly enjoy the opportunity to visit with you folks again in the future regarding the information sharing initiatives that are going on within the government agencies that are so important to all of our livelihoods and to all the ways we go about doing our daily business. Thanks and have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Well, you made some really fantastic points about the key challenges of information from sources that are beyond what you usually would trust, but also from the public sector.
Yeah, you did, Chris. I hadn't considered how important it was to analyze and assess all of the information that contributes to decision-making in government. But now it's time for Listener Mail.
I'm really excited about this segment, John.
I am too, Chris. It's an opportunity for our listeners to ask questions of us and to have more of an interactive show.
Exactly. For this first show, we, of course, don't have any listener mail because, well, this is our first show, and we haven't even given out information as to how to get in touch with us.
Wait, let me check the mailbox to make sure.
Well, okay. You never know.
No, it's empty.
Oh, well. I guess we'll have to wait until next time. For now, though, there are several ways to send us your questions or comments. You can email us at fedpodcast@cisco.com. That's fedpodcast@cisco.com. Or you can call us 866-993-2121. That's 866-993-2121. 2121 and leave your message on our automated answering machine. There's also a survey with questions on the topic of previous show that we want you to participate in. Just go to the Connected Government in Action website, www.cisco.com/go/fedpodcast. Fill out the survey, and we'll read the results in our next podcast. That's www.cisco.com/go/fedpodcast.
One thing to point out, Chris, we want responses to the podcast that we just finished and questions for our upcoming guests. If there's something you'd like us to ask our next guest, let us know.
Thanks, John. That's a good point. Which brings us to our next show, John. Who do we have lined up?
Next time, Chris, we'll hear from Peter Cironas of the Department of Education, who's going to be talking about IP version 6. IP version 6 is a very important topic, given that it's now a government mandate from the U.S. federal government, and it is starting to proliferate around the world as address space starts to become squeezed.
A great first show, if I may say so myself. I think we had a lively discussion today, don't you, John?
We could go on for hours, I think, Chris. A great discussion.
Absolutely. I think there's a great industry leaders who are sharing information today and can serve as models for public and private sector alike.
I think that there was a common thread from all of our guest speakers on information sharing. It's happening now. Governments are learning how to deal with uncontrolled information sources, and that technology has a key role to play in information security, collection, analysis, and dissemination.
Well, thanks for tuning in to Cisco Connected Government in Action podcast. Be sure to download our next show, where we'll be talking about information sharing in public safety and IPv6 in education. And don't forget to write or call in your questions and comments. We value your feedback. Until next time, have a great week, and keep connecting, communicating, and collaborating.